Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this episode, I interview Tom O'Neill to discuss Microsoft's U.S. education business. I've known Tom for over 9 years, and we worked closely together during my tenure at Microsoft. Tom currently leads sales strategy for small and medium-sized education customers in the United States, and he's helping partners transform to the cloud. Tom has focused his entire career in the public sector space. Prior to Microsoft, he spent 17 years at Accenture managing business strategy and large-scale systems implementation projects. And at Microsoft, he's focused primarily on transactional and cloud partners. In this podcast, we discuss the importance of education to Microsoft, the evolution of the channel from transactional to new innovative delivery models. And as I do in each of my interviews, Tom and I explore his personal and professional journey. I hope you enjoy this episode. You can rate and review this podcast by going to iTunes and searching Ultimate Guide to Partnering, and then clicking on Rate and Review. You can also follow me on Facebook at Ultimate Guide to Partnering and my personal Twitter account, Vince Menzione. Thank you for listening and hope you enjoy the podcast. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Vince. Good to hear your voice and happy to do it. It's a great series. I've been listening to some of the earlier casts that you've had, and obviously, you know, our background partnering has been a big business, and I think it's a great series. It's something I'm glad to be a part of.
Great to have you on today and discussing the role that you now lead with the U.S. education business and some of your thoughts on partnering with education and some of the priorities on the business. So really great to have you here.
Yeah, it's been, I've had a lot of opportunity to work in public sector at Microsoft, and the focus on education, which has really pivoted this year. It's been very exciting. It's an industry that is undergoing a lot of transformation. It's a great opportunity for technology companies and their partners. And as I'll probably mention later, there's a lot of closeness in terms of the efforts that you put in on a daily basis and seeing it make a difference in the world. Education is an exciting place.
Education is an exciting place, and I'm glad you mentioned that. We are going to dive in more and more deeply here to the education mission and some of the thoughts on the business and how we drive success with our partners and our listeners. So before we dive in there, I did want to spend a couple of minutes. You have an interesting background before coming to Microsoft. And so I thought maybe you could take our listeners through it. In your bio, you mentioned 14 jobs before you graduated college and then only two companies since. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about that and why so many jobs so early and why not so many now?
Well, I'd like to tell you that it was part of a grand master plan to develop my career, but I think I would be in the minority and probably lying. I think maybe like yourself and maybe many like listening to this particular podcast, there's a little bit of planning and a little bit of luck as things go along the way. And I think, I call out to people that I've had 14 jobs during college, and a lot of that was just to try out a lot of new things. I was an accounting major and I wanted to see what different accountants did in different parts of business. And I got to meet a lot of people that had different responsibilities and see how businesses work. And I think that laid a great foundation then for, the companies that I worked with moving forward. I say I only worked for two companies, and that was Accenture and now Microsoft. But I do have to acknowledge that working for Accenture was like having a lot of little careers. Every project was its own experience, you know, whether we were putting in systems for state lotteries or revenue and taxation agencies or financial departments, working for state governments or local governments or education institutions. Even though it was under one company name, every project was kind of a different, different experience and a different opportunity to learn. And I have to say, Microsoft is a lot that way too, although it's maybe more structured organizationally. I do think that a key to career success at Microsoft is continually inventing the job that you're in. So although I might say I've been in the partner business in public sector for 8 or 9 years now, it's really been 8 or 9 years of different jobs that, you know, I continually look at how is it going to be impactful to our business, and the things I do on a year-to-year basis do change. So it's been two companies, and I think I learned a lot during the college experience. It helped me be flexible and understand how those work, and it's, you know, a great experience. Ultimately, you know, the one saying I kind of always gravitate back to is, you know, work hard at the jobs that you're given, and people will ask you to do interesting things. And, you know, I've certainly found that to be true with both Accenture and Microsoft.
That's a great saying. And we're going to peel back a little bit more on your career and your personal journey a little bit later on in our podcast. But let's focus now on the education business a little bit and talk about what you do at Microsoft with the education partners, what your mission and your role is in that organization.
Yeah, or maybe put, what have I invented for this year? And because there was a change to education. So I kind of tell everyone I have two primary focuses. First was with our breadth business, or those K-12 and higher ed customers that are smaller in size, that have unique solution needs, and really are our best opportunity to work with partners to help them achieve their goals. And so I take a lot of look at, you know, there's literally tens of thousands. There's ultimately, you know, 70,000 or so customers that we have in that space. And, you know, there's no opportunity to connect with them on a day-to-day basis other than through partners. And so thinking about the strategy there, continuing to think about what's going to be needed to make them successful, how they transform in education. That's really the first part of the business. And then the second part is sort of on our partner side, broadly called channel partner engagement. And, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, that would have been transactional partners that we look to touch as many of those 70,000 customers as we can. With the cloud and solution focus change, the transformation, I still work a lot with those partners, but we think a lot harder about what are we focusing on, you know, not so much the transaction, but the solution outcome. How do we look at contracts that are used to buy and sell to customers in that space? What are the importance of consortia or service centers? And, you know, looking at the change in the spending patterns they have. And another big part of that is incentives. How does Microsoft transformation necessarily involves a one-time lift when you're starting from one business model to another, and incentives can help with that transition. So that's another part of the job that I focus on today.
Okay. So just for our listeners that don't know, define what a breadth customer is.
Yeah. There's not really a textbook definition internally either, but I would say they're customers of a certain size. There might be, you know, fewer than 2,000 students or fewer than 500 faculty in education. State and local might have their own definition, but it's those customers that we certainly know that are, you know, important to the delivery of the function. You see how many students are involved in even these small customers across the U.S. It's an impactful segment of the business, but it's also a business that you can't attack the same way. You can't have necessarily a field rep driving around in a car and calling on these people all the time. So you develop different business models that give them the information they need, show them the solutions they have, and you know, give them a broad series of partners to buy those solutions from.
So it'd be equivalent to an SMB or small mid-sized business customer in the commercial segment.
Yeah, that's a great. I think that's a term a lot of folks understand. Good one. Yeah.
And then how you mentioned 70,000 customers. Of those 70,000, how many would you say fall into this breadth space or market?
Oh man, if it was a hard 70,000, I think you could take out the top, you know, 2,500 to 3,000 and say those are customers that you can manage in a more field or one-to-one fashion, and the rest of them are breadth. So if you have a 70,000, say it's 68,000 breadth customers and 2,000 managed.
So well over 90. Yeah, so well over 90% of the marketplaces.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep.
That's amazing. Yep. And so you're managing the engagement with the customer base there. You're also managing, you mentioned transactional partners and the work that's done with what we refer to as LSPs or licensing solution providers and partners of that type. Is that the other function?
It is, yeah. And thinking the LSPs, the way we engage with them, the kinds of conversations we want to have, the things that they buy, going from widgets to units of cloud service, all of that, right? Those partners are still very influential and very important to our business, and the transformation in education affects them as much as it does us.
And I know we're going to dive in a little bit on the transformation and the cloud. How has that impacted those particular partners?
There's a lot of ways to look at that. I think the grounding that I have that provides the best insight is thinking about how those customers buy, how public sector customers buy, they are, you know, very married to their procurement processes. And the simplest way to think about it is that governments and education institutions have always had people that focus on buying widgets of stuff, you know, cans of peaches, road salt, you name it. And that would have been included in the past software licenses because it's sort of a low bid idea versus a best value idea. And that and the best value people, those are the other sets of contract people that buy stuff for their institutions. And we've really moved from saying, you know, we're not selling a low price widget of some kind. We're actually selling a cloud service that needs to meet service level agreements and have quality around it. And so that's sort of a different kind of purchase. And so we're dealing with different people that are setting up contracts. And then there's a, really an overarching, which is kind of interesting to me, an overarching idea that there's standardization around this, the solutions that they're buying. I know that's kind of arcane in a way, but I think if you're a partner that's on the cloud transformational journey, that's a really important thing to understand in terms of the customers that you're working with, because you're going to deal with different people who have different ideas that you're going to have to coach and influence and really be able to pitch on the idea of cloud services. So,
and this is because you're delivering solutions or services rather than just selling a boatload of licenses to a customer.
Yeah, that's right. You know, maybe the overly simplistic way to look at it is the low bid thing is you can buy something and you can put it on a loading dock or put a CD in somebody's hands and you're sort of done. You're done with your responsibilities in that particular contract or transaction. Whereas in cloud, in particular, we know what we want to sell and there's going to be a sales process. But a good example is where, you know, even before the transaction of exchange of purchase order and invoice is complete, you know, we've already started talking to the customer about how we're going to deploy these things. How are they going to achieve success with them? Because merely putting something on the you know, loading dock doesn't ensure any value is going to happen to the customer. It's really in the use of cloud services that value is going to be achieved. And we need to build that into the process prior to the, you know, as I said, the whole exchange of PO and invoice. And so much more kind of longer term focus and different kinds of conversations in the procurement process.
So let's talk a little bit more about education. It is so fundamental to the mission of Microsoft, you know, to empower every person and every organization to achieve more. And, you know, this goes back to the early days of the business and when Bill Gates was running the business. How does U.S. education at Microsoft see its mission today?
Yeah, that's, you know, when your CEO, Satya Nadella, in our case, tells the world that education is one of Microsoft's six priorities, you're feeling pretty good. You know, you feel like you're in the right zone and you feel pretty empowered too. Overall, I think in education, I kind of see this virtuous circle. You know, we help with a transform education system at scale that then is going to foster innovation and new solutions across many parts of life, which will then, you know, give you new things to develop in education and kind of a repeat process. And really, when you're in education, any organization on the planet, all organizations, they all have a vested interest in a vibrant, engaging system of education. It helps everybody, that whole rising tide floats all boats idea. So, you know, in the U.S. education people in business, it's empowering people to achieve their full potential. You know, our mission, that's a very personal idea for all of us. You know, we have a business to run and obligations to our fellow employees that, you know, we're going to be successful as well. But I really don't think there's a better place at Microsoft to see how, you know, our technology mission and vision are making a real difference in the world. And so I'll give you one example. You know, for me and our mission, it really resonates is this idea of personalized learning. You know, technology and all kinds of devices and software applications, that means we can provide new choices to all learners that help to keep them engaged and progressing. The immersive reading idea we have, there's a strong correlation between academic success and reading skill. If people can read, they are so much better prepared to be successful in academics. And yet we still hear these horror stories of middle school and high school kids that are still reading at a third grade level. So we've got this immersive reader product, and it's just really inspiring to hear the stories. And we get a lot of them of students that are dramatically and quickly improving their reading skills. Maybe people that have dyslexia or dysgraphia or their color interpretation isn't quite as strong as it needs to be. And so this immersive reader structures words and books in different ways that maps to how they can read, you know, how they can do better. And so that's a great personalized learning experience. And really it opens up new worlds to another group of future leaders that might otherwise have been left behind. So, you know, your question was about what's the mission, and you know, we work hard about, you know, having software, cloud services, and device management that makes all that, but with an eye toward, you know, that we are the whole mission of the company is the whole mission of education, and it's a great great place to mix those up.
So I know you report to Margot Day, and a lot of partners and partner listeners know Margot, as that she had a long history with the partner community and was the U.S. partner lead, in fact, for many years, and now runs Microsoft's U.S. education business as the VP of education. What can you tell us about her priorities for the business, and how does she see partners delivering on her big bets for education?
Yeah, you're right. Margot, you know, unique in the in her passion and work with partners in the past, and now running the U.S. education business. So we have great, more frequently than monthly conversations about how we can make that work. Maybe a little bit of Captain Obvious, but you know, the transformation in education is gigantic, and this is really translate to fast growing demand for partners to support both higher ed and K-12 customers. And even though that's simple to say, Margot, you know, we've got a good case to take to partners, and Margot can lead that conversation with anybody. But it's also, you know, one that I think we want people to understand and see that there's, you know, the what the opportunity really is. The revolution in devices, you know, the low cost points, the touch, the inking, academic content development, that's really changed. I mean, you know, if you follow who's using textbooks versus who's using electronic content these days, that's all changing. More diverse learners, as we've talked about in the past. The main thing is that, and this is important for partners to understand, you know, educational institutions are having more than ever to focus their scarce education people and resources on their main mission. And so, you know, there's like, I can think of three good ways off the top of our head that our partners should be looking at the education business in ways that they can plug in and really help education institutions and have a vibrant business themselves. The first way is really, and this is true outside of education as well, it's sort of our fundamental cloud message, but partners can help by, you know, running these managed cloud services at scale, providing better service, lower cost. They can do things like, you know, security, communication, collaboration, device management. Those are all examples. And one of the things I tell partners that they can have a conversation with that kind of helps customers understand this is in ways, it's like everybody understands how you virtualize a server, right? That helps you take the cost of a server and get more value out of it. Well, in a way, cloud services help partners virtualize human technologists. You know, I think a K-12 institution or a higher institution, they would love to be in the nirvana of where they have somebody that's a great collaboration, you know, SharePoint resource or a security resource or an identity managed resource. And if you had all those people, you know, your IT shop would hum. But it's very difficult to sustain that because those resources are scarce and it's expensive. So I tell, you know, partners to tell their customers, look, I've got these resources. I've got an identity management resource that knows identity management cold. You don't need that person 7x24. You want them on demand. Just like you would virtualize a server, you're going to virtualize this identity person. And so that helps them position that, hey, customer, you don't really necessarily need to be in this business. In fact, I can do it better for you and more cheaply, and that's going to allow you to focus. That's kind of the first of the three ideas. The second is around new learning curriculum and content. I mentioned before, you know, the idea of static notebooks, textbooks rather, moving towards more dynamic content, supported learning. You know, you can provide instant feedback. It's a little bit of the wild, wild west out there right now with the traditional textbook manufacturers sort of on the decline in their core business and a lot of companies trying to fill in the gap of how that takes place. And there's some really good ones out there. But you get, you know, devices with touch and inking and classroom support tools like OneNote. You know, we've got Minecraft out there now where you can take math or history lessons using Minecraft. And that's great because, one, it's a model that, you know, kids are interested in using kind of game type devices, and then being able to take, you know, learn content in a different, more interactive ways. And in this case, in the case of curriculum and content, partners can either be developers of that content or facilitators. You know, a lot of times these customers are just looking for somebody that can help them be a cloud services broker. And if you've got a model to scale that out, backed by a cloud, you can trust you're going to be in a good position to do that. And then the third one is really around data capture, management, analysis. I think that's true a lot outside of education as well. There's a lot of talk about, massive data analysis and availability of data sets and being able to connect to them and correlate them and so forth. But that's obviously a good one in education as well. I think if you're a partner that can do that, you're going to find a lot of upside opportunity in the education space. I'll call out a recent study by the California State Auditor that found a really strong inflection point in ninth grade. That was the point where we could see a divergence between students that were going to be successful and students that weren't going to, graduate on time and be successful. And so, if you're a partner, you look at something like that and say, well, why don't I put something in place that, connects me to all the data sets that are already available, start doing analysis in the seventh, eighth, and ninth grade student populations, and help institute some remediation programs that are going to ultimately improve graduation rates. So, the whole data idea. So, traditional cloud services, I'll call them, and curriculum and content, and then data management. Those are three areas I think that are really good for any partner that's, interested in already engaged in education.
Those are some broad categories. I like it though. So, basically cloud services, curriculum and content, and then what I would refer to as BI, right? The big data initiative, cognitive being a component of that. And you gave some great examples there, Tom. So we talked a little bit about the shift and the transformation for customers and for partners delivering on these types of offerings and solutions. Can you discuss for our listeners your view of what has fundamentally changed and how you think about what customer success looks like today?
Yeah, it's. I think the change, obviously, we talked a little bit about the whole idea of widgets of low cost versus cloud services, which are best value, and I think that's an important one to understand. The other thing that I would say from a partner perspective, all up, we spend a lot of time on, and this is a great dialogue, provocative type conversation we should be having Microsoft with all of our partners, and that's around the business model. The old way, if you will, is that you make money by margin on transaction or net margin on selling hours of professional service. And you focus on things like utilization rate and so forth. And ultimately the model for cloud services tends to be on units of cloud service. One person getting email and collaboration and communication support for 1 month. And so there's a lot of conversation we need to have about the right way to do that, the right way to get the margin, the whole business model conversation, if you will. And we have an army of people literally now that are focused on having that conversation with our partners. And so that's one of the big changes. And I think getting a partner to, fully engage is one of its underpinnings that partner's executives understand and are committed to that business model. And I recognize that's a very hard thing to change, because there's a lot of companies that are very successful using transactional or hours of professional services business models. And frankly, there's probably not a lot to scare them away from that. There's a lot of dollars that are moving into the cloud services, but there's still a lot of need for hours of professional service. So, we spend a lot of time making sure partners can understand that, can feel comfortable with it, can see that working with Microsoft through that transition period of getting from old to new, there's a joint investment that we're going to make with you in terms of people and technology and engineering and perhaps even some financial support to get through that. So that's a big, big shift as well. And I think one that, as I think in education about our channel and how we do that, I know I'm going to be having that conversation quite a bit more. But I will say on the one upside, particularly in K-12 in education, K-12 customers have already been in a mindset over more than a few years of having a centralized function for a group of K-12 districts in the form of service centers. And these things are called, are in every state, they're called different things. Sometimes they're a BOCES, sometimes they're an ESC, sometimes they're RSC, Regional Service Center. And they do things like, teacher professional development. They do things like some basic technology support. They'll do things like maybe help them out with borrowing, you know, how to borrow money on the market and so forth. So, but really what that means from a high level perspective is that these smaller K-12 districts realize they can't do everything themselves. And so they support and pay for these regional service centers to do that for them. So the idea of being able to come in and not have 50 conversations with 50 districts to try and get a sale done, you can work with these consortium. You know, the K-12 sort of lends itself to that business model anyway. And so, although it is a, you know, a fine and somewhat complex conversation to have about changing your business model to work in education, we do have some landing spots for partners that I think they should find appealing and will help them with that transition.
So you mentioned the term BOSE. I think it's B-O-S-E. What does that BOSE stand for?
Board of Cooperative Education Support. Don't quote me on that.
Okay.
I know Colorado uses them and New York uses them. It's a name of, it's B-O-C-E-S, by the way.
B-O-C-E-S.
And it's a name of an organization that provides sort of centralized support for groups of K-12 districts.
It's something we can provide a link to in the show notes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And as I said, every state will have them. In Texas, they're called ESCs, for example.
And you talked about the partner journey, and I had William Llewellyn on here talking about Cloud Solution Provider Program. And I know through that program, there are some monetization tools that are available and business modeling tools for partners that are making that transition and shift. I'm glad you mentioned it because it takes a huge commitment, especially for smaller organizations to make that kind of shift in their business model and their revenue models. And also, in fact, how they compensate their sellers changes because you're moving from a transactional contract value model to a pay-as-you-go services monthly fee model with the cloud. So glad you mentioned that. That I'm sure is an area of concern and certainly an area for education for our partners.
Yeah, it is. I'd throw one thought on that because that's a good one. I mentioned standardization before, and you know, here's sort of an essence of a conversation that I might be having with a partner today that sells hours of professional service. You know, those people, they get paid to come in and do something on site for a customer. And usually what it is it's to make something work that's unique for that customer. And the customer knows what they want it to do on their site. And these people can come in and help make that happen. And cloud solution partners, particularly the CSP program, which, you know, for everybody listening is an extremely important program for education as well. That's really about crafting a cloud solution that's a standardized type of solution that multiple customers can use. And so there's a little bit of a change management effort that you need to have with your customer base on this. You know, they may be used to having a simple example like a, you know, SharePoint collaboration system that does exactly the way they want it. They've tailored it. They've put in unique workflow, maybe coded some things into it that help with security and so forth. And doing that, you know, may be well aligned with the way the company executes, but it can be expensive and risky to maintain. So really when you're in the cloud solution business, you're saying, I got a SharePoint environment. I'm going to take advantage of all the things SharePoint can do. There are a lot of not customization so much, but configurations that you can do to make it work. But it's going to be, you know, set up in a way that it takes advantage of what the product can do. The product can continue to upgrade, and you know you're not going to be in the business of trying to support some add-ons that are not necessarily value-added or maybe expensive and risky, as I said, to maintain. So what you get thinking about is an SI partner that's selling hours of service today is not so much how do I, you know, deliver in a way that gives the customer what they're asking for, to how am I going to develop a solution that's going to support a number of customers in a way that's, you know, more cost effective. And that is a bit different thinking for the people that you employ and certainly for how they're going to be successful it's not so much utilization of hours as it is, you know, numbers of customers that are buying monthly subscription services to support your new business model. And that's one of those sort of complex conversations to have, but we've got the conversation. We understand that, and it's a product of, you know, what we do with our partners on a day-to-day basis.
So what about a partner that hasn't invested or is new to the U.S. education market? Where do you direct them? Where do you lead them? And what would you tell them with regards to how to engage in U.S. education?
Yeah, so certainly I think the different parts of Microsoft are all staffed with people that are making sure we have coverage. You know, we've got the capacity partners of partners that we need. That's part of what I do for education in the channel space. You know, do we have the right partners and the capacity? And, you know, we're always talking to partners that are new and interested in getting in that business. And I think that's the best place to start. There's other folks that are involved in the U.S. education business at Microsoft that share my type of responsibility, but for different types of partners. Maybe you're an ISV today, or you're a system integrator today versus a channel type partner. And so what we all do is, you know, we certainly want to make sure you understand the opportunity in education and learn a little bit more about the partners themselves. You know, are you focused in a specific geography, or do you have a solution that you want to support across a broader geography, and how we can help you support that? And from there, we get, you know, we try to put together a business plan that says, what are you doing well today? What are the things that we need you to get better on? And how do we connect you with Microsoft resources that can help you get better in those things? And then ultimately hearing from you, you know, what kind of commitments do you want to make with Microsoft to grow your business? And, you know, once we get those kinds of things in place, then, you know, then we're on the right path to saying we're going to, you know, have something to celebrate on periodic basis, 6 month, 12 month, 18 month in basis. You know, and I would say underpinning all of that, whether you're talking to me in education or to anybody in public sector or even anybody in commercial, there is still a foundation that is becoming more and more important for partners, that they have, you know, industry knowledge that's important to the customers that they choose to support. So if you're in education, you know, you got to understand the education business and how their funding works, and, you know, what all the changes are that are going on in terms of student performance and management and so forth, and start, you know, having connections with people in that space that are going to see you as a thought leader as well. And that is going to be an important part of your business no matter what. Certainly working with Microsoft, but I just think the whole cloud transformation is putting a bigger premium on partners being able to, you know, understand and be impactful into the in ways that are meaningful to their customers' business, even more so than it has been, you know, in the past.
And the education organization does outreach to partners and the customers. Is there any specific readiness you'd recommend for those partners?
So actually, anybody that is interested, we have an education partner community that has a Yammer site that we do webcasts for all the time that allow them to connect with other partners and Microsoft. I'll mention Cynthia Hanna's name. She's my counterpart that takes care of the SI community, and she also manages the education partner community. I can give you, it's one of those links that's not going to translate well on a podcast, Vince, but I'll give you a link for that as well. And anybody in the audience that's interested in connecting with the education team, really just go to that, we call it a team site, and ask to join, and you'll be popped in and start seeing all the chatter that's going on around the mighty education business.
Great. Because I know there's a lot of content, and we can't cover it all today on today's podcast, or else we'll be on for several hours, but we will provide that information to our partners. So let's shift a little bit here on partners. And I want to ask you, basically, from your experiences working with partners, can you give me an example of when a partner totally got it right working with Microsoft? What did they do differently than other partners or better than others?
One of the businesses I'll call out on that, then, coming from the channel space, is CDW. And if you're listening to this podcast and you know of CDW, then you know they're a, you know, big transactional powerhouse and great at execution, good at customer service. And they've been a key partner for us in our transformation of the cloud with education. And they've done it in a way, there's two things I think that they did that are helping them and really getting some joint success going. The first is that we started with an existing base of business that was successful for both of us and important education. In this case, it was devices. But there's a transformation going on in devices in terms of how customers buy it, what they expect the device to do, how they secure it and manage it. And so we've had that transformation going on too. So that was a good way for both of us to say, okay, here's something that we've both done well in the past. It's important to our education customers, and let's work together to transform that piece of the business. And ultimately, that can pull through a set of cloud services that CDW is committing and starting to deliver as well. But I think all of that transpired because of what I talked about earlier in the podcast about making sure you understand the business model and have done the math and due diligence that convince you that it's going to be a successful play within your business. And CDW did that in spades. And so they were able to make the kind of commitment with people and engineering of tools and resources and so forth that allow them to develop and put those solutions in market and work with customers in a way that, you know, sort of takes advantage of their existing relationships that they've had with customers, their existing experience in K-12, but deliver new types of solutions. And so again, you know, that foundation of understanding the business model and then, you know, starting out with something that's a comfortable area that you can see success in the transformational execution. Both of those things led to some very good conversations and good success with CDW.
And in this case, a mobile first, cloud first strategy, which directly aligns with Satya's vision for the business.
It does. And that's a great example. You know, devices leads you immediately into security and identity management conversations. And so, and our customers can draw that, you know, kind of connect those dots as well. And so it wasn't too hard for us to put together some materials and conversational documents and have discussions with customers that started to get them to understand why this was more than just a, you know, as I mentioned before, a device showing up on a loading dock. This was a solution that we needed to plan for in advance and then start to deliver beyond the transaction.
So now I'm going to shift it and ask you, what about a partner or partners that just couldn't figure it out and failed working with Microsoft? And you don't have to mention names here, but what was one thing you wished you had told them? And what would you say to them now if they were listening to the podcast?
I would say the one, when if we look at engagement on a partner conversation and then getting it to a point in deciding to disengage, the two things, and they're kind of intertwined, were that, you know, we didn't make a convincing case about the business model. And frankly, it could be a company that's just not willing to take the risk. You know, the two that I can think of, you know, they've had such a successful business model in the past of selling, you know, either widgets or hours of professional service. And I realize those are a little bit oversimplification, but it kind of highlights the point is that they're used to doing things in a certain way. They've got people hired to train to do things in a certain way. They've got internal infrastructure set up to manage the business that way. And frankly, you know, maybe a leadership team that's just not, you know, it's not in their gut to make the change at this point. And that's probably because we didn't do a good job of conveying how the business model would work and what the opportunity was in our specific business. But there's a combination of things there. There's no question, you know, the things that we talk about and we ask of our partners in this transformation are scary. Lord knows they've been scary for Microsoft. You know, this whole idea that we say in Microsoft, we're performing and transforming at the same time, which has, you know, people use other adages to kind of describe that situation. It is scary. But I think if you see the North Star, if you understand where we're headed and you can see why it's going to be successful, then just like for our internal Microsoft employees and finding confidence and desire to execute, our partners will as well. And so your question was, what sort of was the one thing that didn't work? And I think it's probably just didn't paint the good enough picture of what that North Star is and why it's going to be as successful as it's going to be.
Yeah, and so I would equate that to commitment, right? So the commitment wasn't made because the vision wasn't there or wasn't seen. And in the case of the commitment, it comes back to the conversation we had earlier, this perform and transform requires a commitment of resources and monetization to support the change of the business.
Yep. Education is, I mentioned we have tens of thousands of customers today. We don't have all 70,000 yet, but, you know, there's still a lot. I spend a lot of time of my day still working on the whole transactional side. That's a necessary thing, but that's the perform part. The transform part is all the work going on with, you know, good partners like CDW. And so doing both of those things at the same time can be quite a challenge.
So what is one thing you know to be true about working with Microsoft that we don't teach our partners?
So that's a great question. I think about the partners that, you know, that have been successful in ways that maybe weren't part of the partner playbook, you know, a common theme among those partners is that they have lots of touch points within Microsoft. And we've got some great partner managers. There's no question about it. I'm very impressed with all my partner peers that are either in a public sector or a commercial business, but it's still usually one person, right? And when you talk about a partner type cloud service based business that you have between Microsoft and its partners, you're going to need a lot of help. You know, you're going to need people that are in engineering and marketing and sales and so I think a good partner that is, you know, one thing I would tell, I guess, our partners is cultivate those contacts, maybe even demand it from your partner executive counterpart, you know, make that a part of your business plan that you've got, you know, regular people that are maybe not necessarily committed to supporting your business, but they're engaged with you to help out when you need it. People that are great solution professionals or technology professionals or people that know marketing. And when you have that, and when you've kind of, you know, you're doing a good give get kind of relationship with a broad set of people like that, partners are going to find a very positive and beneficial experience in their engagement with Microsoft.
So, any advice on how to do that specifically? Is there? I know there are events where partners can meet with Microsoft's leadership teams. What do you suggest there? And I know Inspire is also coming up in a fairly short period of time here.
That's a great one to take advantage of, and I'm happy to provide you this link too. But we do have a commercial and public sector combined partner facing website within the Microsoft Partner Network portal that discusses all of the upcoming training events. And so we had back in March and April timeframe, for example, we stopped in I think 21 cities. And had sort of a partner update. And those are great opportunities to attend because public sector's there, commercial SMSMP or the small companies are there, commercial EPG, the big companies are there. And it's people that are either in the partner business or in our technology side or in our sales side. So it's a really good cross-section of information. Great way to make some initial contacts and then, you know, get in touch with people that may be specific to the geography you're supporting or the customer types you're supporting and so forth. That would be a great thing to put in your quarterly rhythm with Microsoft. I think we do those about once a quarter, those rotations. And then if you've got a partner sales executive or PSE that's supporting your business, you know, make that a part of your one-on-one with them, you know, make a quarterly goal or a semester goal to say, you know, I want to get three more or four more people, two salespeople, one marketer and one Office 365 solution professional as part of my virtual circle of contacts within Microsoft. And the PSEs, you know, should be able to help you do that.
So 13 years at Microsoft, what was the most worthwhile piece of advice someone gave you when you joined the company?
Okay, that's a great question. Learning to work with Microsoft was a challenge in itself. And I think there's a couple things I noticed, particularly in public sector. One was that we, in public sector, we tended to spend more time in role than our commercial brethren. And it was more of an opportunity to, as I talked about before, invent what you do on a regular basis. And the more that I've done that within Microsoft, the more that I kind of coach our partners on that as well, is that it is all, you know, constant reinvention of what's going on in your business. And thinking about who you engage with, what kind of investments can be made, and really getting the confidence to understand the business and propose, you know, we have these ideas within Microsoft that you want to think of an idea, a proposal, an opportunity to the growth of the business that's so outlandish, that's so outrageous that you have to have Amy Hood approve it. You know, and if you're thinking like that, then you're thinking the right way. You know, you're thinking in the ways that are going to be impactful to the business. And so that for me has been personally the most beneficial type of advice and counsel I've had with my mentors here.
So what is one thing that you think you're good at that has helped advance your career at Microsoft?
I know I have a job to do, but I think taking care of the big things, the strategic things, will make taking care of the little things easier. And that's an important element for me because, as I mentioned, we've got, you know, 70,000 customers, tens of thousands of agreements, it's very easy to get sucked into the day-to-day things that are going on. But I think the ability to step back and, you know, question why we do things, in some cases, propose different ways, and really, you know, one, research them and be forceful at getting those things to happen. That's the thing I think I've kind of morphed into that get me put on virtual teams and help drive success. You know, you and I worked on a couple projects around payment of incentives with government customers. And, you know, there's a natural and perfectly understandable reaction to say, hey, we shouldn't do that. That's only going to bring you trouble. But when you stop and think about it and you take a look at the market and you take a look at the details involved and what the exposure to the company is, there are ways that can be managed in an appropriate fashion and bring good business results. And so that took a lot of persistence and a lot of kind of challenging people's thinking. And, you know, that's one of the things I'm proud of. One of the outcomes we had that I thought was quite good.
So what advice would you give to someone you were mentoring that wished to work at Microsoft or in your organization?
Well, to me, and this was true about Accenture as well, it's great. It's such a learning opportunity. Both organizations are so expansive in their capability to deliver services that you can constantly learn. And anybody that's going to be successful needs to have a desire to constantly learn. But I think the career part of it is really thinking about what is it you want to do? You know, to me, I think there's opportunities to develop and drive teams, and then there's opportunities to develop and drive solutions with customers. And it's kind of like constantly asking, what part of it, of this all, is the part you're really passionate about, and making sure your career is in that direction. You know, at Accenture, it was always about, you know, what I would call the traditional career path was always about, you know, becoming a partner. And you could say that a traditional career path at Microsoft is all about becoming a VP or a corp vice president. And those are great career paths. And both companies, you know, certainly at the time I worked at Accenture, I'm sure it still is, offer that opportunity. But that doesn't necessarily mean that has to be your career path. You know, there are other ways to be successful at both companies that are very enriching and valuable to everybody. And so I know that's the thing, you know, lifelong learning and, you know, really thinking about what is it that you want to do. You could be a, you know, big team manager. You could be a, you know, a customer delivery manager. There's lots of different things you can do that'll be successful. And just keeping that open mindset as you go through it. Always have good mentors. That's the number one key.
So is there a book you've read recently or would recommend to our audience?
There are a lot of good books that are out, but I tell you what, I've got a bookcase next to me at my desk here. And the one book I pull down more often is The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. I don't know why that one resonates with me so much, but it always painted I'm kind of a data structured type person. And I think one, the model of that book puts together really makes sense to me. And two, there's a couple of them that particularly habit number one, which is be proactive. That is not my best of the 7. And so the one probably I spend the most time thinking about and rereading to remind myself about how important it is to be proactive and deliver. So I just feel like those 7 things, there's a lot of books I think that can help you out with, you know, specific skills that are, you know, needed in either technologically or from a management or business perspective. And I found those useful, but the 7 habits just, you know, gives me a framework into which to plug all of that and, you know, continue making progress.
That's a classic. And one that I've gifted that book to multiple people over the years. That's a great suggestion, Tom. I think we'll make sure we put that in the show notes for.
Good.
I'm sure they can access it. So what advice would you give your 30-year-old self?
You know, that would require me to divulge my age in a certain context, but I would tell myself to be a little more risky. You know, when I was 30, it was sort of in the throes of the dot-com boom, and I was with Accenture at that time and chose to stay with Accenture, learned a lot, you know, had a good career, but I had peers that left to go do things that were a little more risky. And not all of them were successful necessarily, but I think they learned things that I probably would have enjoyed learning, and I was just not willing to make myself take that kind of chance or risk at that point in my career.
So take more risk.
Yeah, I think so.
More risk. And so I did ask 30-year-old self and not 20-year-old self, because I didn't want to have to reach back into the memory banks that far. We're getting ready to wrap up here. And thank you, by the way, for being on today. I think we covered quite a bit on education, but is there anything specifically that we didn't cover yet that you want to impart on our partner listeners today?
So that's a great question. We had a great conversation today, Vince. I think we touched on a lot of things in education that are key topics of the day. And the opportunity is very exciting. I said it's the part of the business, I think, at Microsoft where I feel closest to what I do in our job to make Microsoft successful, being very close to helping customers do what they do and being able to see and be a part of that. There's a lot of change going on in education, you know, at the federal level. Department of Education's got some new ideas, new thinking, new ways of funding that are very much, you know, new for everybody that's in the space at the state level. And there's certainly the technology itself, as it says, bringing all this into play. So I think if you're at a point in your career where you really want to do something that you find impactful, that would welcome skilled resources, and you're going to look back on, you know, tell your 30-year-old self that, hey, that was a great idea getting into the education business, I think you would make the right call. And certainly happy to have that conversation with anybody that's interested in having that. And I guess I'll wrap up too by saying, Vince, thanks for the opportunity to be on the podcast today. Great conversation. No,
thank you, Tom. And we are going to provide a contact link for you as well. If people want to reach out specifically and ask Tom O'Neill. I think it's TLO'Neill@Microsoft.com. We'll do that as well for our listeners. I want to thank you again for joining. Education, again, a great area for, you know, in terms of outcomes for students and for 21st century learning. So I'm glad we were able to share this time today and with our listeners. Thank you, Tom.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione. Online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Ultimate Guide to Partnering.